Lord Peter Wimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter, with Ambrosine Philpotts as Miss Clemson, and Gabriel Wolfe as Inspector Parker. Unnatural Death by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted in 7 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 2, Death in Epping Forest. Lord Peter Wimsey, investigating the mysteriously sudden death 18 months previously of Agatha Dawson, has advertised in the press in an attempt to contact her 2 former maids, Evelyn and Bertha Gotobed. One morning, a week later, he learns that Bertha has been found dead in Epping Forest. Accompanied by his friend, Inspector Parker, he drives out there at once.
Superintendent!
Inspector Parker, isn't it? Yard said you were coming down.
Yes, morning. Peter, this is Superintendent Walmsley. Superintendent, Lord Peter Wimsey.
How do you do? Well, this is a beastly business, Superintendent. I inserted that advertisement in the paper, you know.
Oh, yes, my lord. We did find a cutting in the young woman's handbag. Something about she and her sister communicating with the Mr. Merbles of Staple Inn to learn something to their advantage.
My solicitor, yes. The fact is, though, the advantage was going to be entirely on my side.
My lord?
She and her sister used to work for an old lady in the country, but were sacked by her niece shortly after the old girl had some sort of hysterical attack which the 2 girls witnessed. I'd been hoping one or other of them would be able to tell me more about it. Now this, Superintendent. Murder.
Oh, no, my lord.
No?
No. I've just had the police surgeon's report. He says there's no reason to suspect foul play. Probably heart failure or something of the sort.
Really? Curious coincidence there, ain't it, Charles? First, Miss Agatha Dawson pops off unexpectedly, but from natural causes. And now Bertha Gotobed does the same thing. You quite sure, Superintendent?
Well, my lord, if it was murder, it must have been the poisoning job, because there wasn't the slightest sign of a wound or a struggle. I reckon she must have sat down when she felt herself bad and then just fallen back.
Don't you think if she'd fallen back and her weight would have snapped some of these young shoots?
Mm-hmm. You don't suppose she was brought and put here, do you, Inspector?
I don't suppose anything. I merely draw attention to a point which I think you should consider. Peter, what have you found there?
A ham sandwich wrapped in newspaper and an empty beer bottle.
Stuffed in the trunk of that oak, were they? Picnickers, no doubt. Nothing to do with the body, I dare say.
I think you're mistaken there, Superintendent. Tell me, when did the girl disappear exactly?
Oh, she went off duty at the corner house at 5 a week ago tomorrow. Wednesday, the 27th. And she didn't go home to her lodgings that night.
Well, now, you see, this is the Evening Views of Wednesday, the 27th, late final edition. And that edition ain't on the streets until about 6 o'clock. So it was almost certainly brought here by the girl herself, or somebody who came with her. Hardly likely anybody would come and picnic here afterwards, not with her body there.
No. From the beer bottle, it looks as though her companion was a man, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Did she have a young man, do you know, Superintendent?
There is a fiancé. Something to do with the railway, I believe.
Ah.
Collins has gone down to interview him.
Looks like the old story, then. That's it. Take care of that bottle, Peter. It may have fingerprints on it.
You can have the bottle, Charles. Mayn we ne'er lack a friend or a bottle to give him, as Dick Swiveller says. But I earnestly beg that before you caution your respectable young railway clerk, or whatever he is, you will cast your eye and your nose upon this ham sandwich.
It's an ordinary ham sandwich, isn't it?
Oh, gods of the wine flask and the board, how long, how long. It is a ham sandwich, Goth, but not an ordinary one. Never did it see Lion's Kitchen or the counter of the multiple store. Observe the hard texture, the deep, brownish tint of the lean, the rich fat, yellow as a Chinaman's cheek. The dark spot where the black treacle cure has soaked in to make a dish fit to lure Zeus from Olympus. And tell me, man of no discrimination and worthy to be fed on boiled cod all the year round, tell me how it comes that your little waitress and her young man, who has something to do with the railway, come down to Epping Forest to regale themselves on sandwiches made from coal black treacle-cured Bradenham ham.
Oh, Peter.
Ham, which I may add, costs about 3 shillings a pound, uncooked. An argument which you will allow to be weighty.
Oh, well, that's odd, certainly. I imagine that only rich people could
afford... Only rich people, or people who understand eating as a fine art. The two classes are by no means identical, though they do occasionally overlap.
Yeah, that may be very important. Superintendent, will you put these with the other exhibits? Now, what's this?
Oh, I think that will be Mrs. Gulliver, the girl's landlady. Excuse me one moment, my lord.
Landlady, eh? It was she who wrote to Merbles, Charles, answering my advertisement. I think I'd like to hear what Mrs. Gulliver has to say.
Well, let's join them, then.
I identified the body. Yes, Superintendent. It is poor Bertha. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Such a nice young lady. What a terrible thing. Who would do a thing like that? Oh, I've been in such a state of worriment ever since she didn't come home last Wednesday. I'm sure many's the time since I've cursed myself for showing her that wicked advertisement. Oh, what a dreadful thing it is that people should be luring young girls away with stories about something to their advantage. A sinful old devil, calling himself a lawyer too. Mark my words, it's that Merbles has killed her as sure as my name's Dorcas Gulliver.
Poor old Merbles, Charles. But I say, Mrs. Gulliver, excuse me butting in, don't you know, but can you tell me one thing? What about Bertha's sister Evelyn? Do you know where she is?
Oh, why, yes, sir. She's in Canada. Married that nice Mr. Cropper last month, didn't she? And went back there with him.
I rather think that saved her life, Charles.
Excuse me, Mrs. Gulliver, could you tell us something more about the two girls? What were they like?
Oh, they was good girls, sir, and respectable, both of them. Not the flighty sort at all.
No, I'm sure they weren't, Mrs. Gulliver. And how long were they with you?
Oh, 15 months or so, sir. They come to me when they was looking for work in London, right at the start. They'd been in service in the country before, you see, in an old lady's house, what was dying. And then they'd had this London idea put into their heads to come and work here, like, by the old lady's niece, who was their mistress.
Well, that's odd, ain't it? Why should she have done that?
Well, now, sir, that was a thing I never could understand. Wouldn't you think that with good service that hard to come by, she'd have done all she could to keep them with her? But no. There was a bit of trouble one day over Bertha having broke an old teapot. And the niece, Miss Whittaker her name was, says, "You'll have to go," she says, "and I'll give you a very good character and you'll soon get a good place. And I expect Evelyn'll want to go with you," she says, "so why not go to London? You'll have a much more interesting life there than what you would here." And the end of it was, she filled them up so with stories of what grand situations was to be had for the asking in London that they was mad to go. And she give him a present of money and behave very handsome, take it all round.
Miss Whittaker seems to have been very particular about her teapot. Well, thank you, Mrs. Gulliver. What you've told us has been most interesting. And now I will bid you good morning. Oh,
you're welcome, sir, I'm sure. Goodbye.
Now do you believe Mary Whittaker has something to hide about her aunt's last few months?
No, Peter, not yet.
Oh, confound you. Very well. Remind me to show you Miss Clemson's latest letter next time I see you. That good lady has been gossiping around Lee Hampton as if to the manor born. And I will tell you another thing, Charles. By no means everybody there is convinced Agatha Dawson died a natural death either. It is not just me, you see.
Care of Mrs. Hamilton Budge, Fairview, Nelson Avenue, Lee Hampton. My dear Lord Peter, I have been doing my utmost to discover all I can about Miss Dawson's most unhappy last illness, and now I am pleased to report that I have met with some success. Indeed, I have even met with Miss Whittaker at a vicarage working party. She is quite a pillar of the church, but more of her later. Now, at the working party were several ladies, including a Miss Murgatroyd and a Mrs. Peasgood, who appear both to live on gossip alone, I'm very pleased to say. Certainly, when I casually mentioned that I was thinking of coming to live in Leehampton, and had heard from Mrs. Budge that Miss Whittaker might be considering letting her house, their eyes came out as if on stalks.
Miss Whittaker?
Oh, no. Surely not.
I'm sure Miss Whittaker would have told me if she thought of giving up her house. We're such great friends.
I don't know. There may be something in it. I know dear Miss Whittaker has sometimes spoken to me about wishing to take up chicken farming. I dare say she has not mentioned the matter generally, but then she always confides in me. Depend upon it, that is what she intends to do.
Mrs. Budge didn't actually say Miss Whittaker was moving. She said, I think, that Miss Whittaker had been left on her own by some relation's death, and she wouldn't be surprised if she found the house lonely.
Yes, indeed, Miss Clemson. I've often thought the same thing myself. And I've said so to Miss Whittaker, too. I'm one of those that believe in speaking their mind, you know.
Oh, well, now so am I, Mrs. Peasgood. And that is what I said to Mrs. Budge at the time. I said, do I understand that there was something odd about the old lady's death? Because she had spoken of the peculiar circumstances of the case, and you know, I should not at all like to live in a house which could be called in any way notorious.
Oh, but not at all, not at all, Miss Clipson. There never was a more wicked story. The death was natural, perfectly natural, and a most happy release, I'm sure. It was all a scandalous story, put about by that young Dr. Carr, whom I'm sure I never liked, simply to aggrandize himself.
There may be two opinions about that, Miss Murgatroyd. I say what I think, Miss Crimson, and in my opinion there should have been an inquest. I believe Dr. Carr to have been a very able young man, though, of course, he was not the kind of old-fashioned family doctor that appeals to elderly people.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Peasgood. Thank you very much, I'm sure.
I say what I think.
Then I'm glad I haven't such uncharitable thoughts.
I don't think your own observations are so remarkable for their charity.
And so on and so on and so on, Lord Peter. But I must not take up any more of your time with women's silly twaddle. Let me tell you about Miss Whittaker herself. She arrived at the tea party shortly after this to-do, and I hope you will not misunderstand me if I say she appeared totally out of place at such a function. She's very much the type that does well in the city. Very handsome, with strongly marked features, and a pleasant, self-possessed manner, but not, I venture to suggest, a passionate nature. On being introduced to her by Mrs. Treadgold, I resolved not to mention the house for fear of seeming too pushing on a first acquaintance. But one of the younger women there, the somewhat coltish Miss Finlater, who had already heard from Mrs. Peasgood a most inaccurate account of my earlier inquiries. Oh, how the gossip was flying that afternoon! She brought the subject up, much to my discomfiture, and I was obliged to explain my interest away as best I could, which I flatter myself was quite well enough. It seems that Miss Finlater is most eager that she and Miss Whittaker should pursue the latter's chicken farm scheme together, as she, Miss Finlater, assures me she is simply longing to live close to the earth and the fundamental crudities. But Miss Whittaker told me that much as she too would enjoy an active country life with something definite to do, she has such a deep affection for her late aunt's house that she cannot tear herself away. She seemed very anxious to give this impression. Would it be fair for me to say, the lady doth protest too much, methinks? And nevertheless, despite this, I have since heard that Miss Finlater has finally persuaded Miss Whittaker to definite steps about the poultry farm, and they've now gone away together to inspect one which they saw advertised in the poultry news. They propose to be away several weeks.
I must say, I consider it rather unhealthy.
Miss Finlater has evidently quite a pash, as we used to call it at school, for Miss Whittaker. Though what that lady can see in such a gushing, really silly young woman, I cannot think. However, Miss Finlater has promised to tell me all about their doings on her return. So until then, when I should have more to relate, I remain very sincerely yours, Alexandra Catherine Clemson.
Charles, good evening.
Evening, Peter.
Come in, old lad, and help yourself to a whiskey and splash.
Thank you.
Well, what's been happening since this morning? Anything fresh?
Mm-hmm. I've got a new theory of the crime, which knocks yours into a cocked hat. I've got evidence to support it, too.
Which crime?
The Epping Forest business. I don't believe the old Dawson person was murdered. That's just an idea of yours.
I see. And you are now going to tell me that Bertha Gotobed was got hold of by the white slave people.
Now, how did you know?
Because Scotland Yard have two maggots which crop up whenever anything happens to a young woman. Either it is white slavery or dope dens, sometimes both. You are going to say that it is both.
Well, I was, as a matter of fact. Well, it so often is, you know. Anyway, there was a £5 note in the dead girl's handbag, and we've traced it. Seems to me to be the clue to the whole thing. It's one of a series paid out to a Mrs. Forrest living in South Audley Street. I've been round to make inquiries.
Did you see the lady?
No, she was out. She usually is, I'm told. In fact, her habits seem to be expensive, irregular, and mysterious.
Doesn't anybody ever see her?
Oh, yes. Yes, the people in the flat below gave me quite a good description. Mm-hmm. Tall, overdressed, musquash, heavily peroxided. More importantly, she drives a Renault 4-seater, dark green with tapestried doings. Garage is just around the corner. I've seen the man. He says the car was out on the night of the 27th, went out at 11:30, returned about 8 the next morning. What's more, the charwoman says that there had been supper for two in the flat that night, 3 bottles of champagne drunk. Also, there is a ham in the flat.
A Bradenham ham?
How do you expect the charwoman to know that? But I think it probably is, because Fortnum and Mason's delivered one about a fortnight ago.
That sounds conclusive. So I take it you think Bertha Gotobed was inveigled there for some undesirable purpose by Mrs. Forrest and had supper with her.
Oh, no, I should think there was a man.
Yes. Yes, of course. Mrs. F. brings the parties together. Whimsy? Yes, he is. Just one moment. Charles?
Yes, thanks. Yes? Good, yes, I'll come over straight away. Well, people in the flat below. I asked them to ring here if Mrs. Forrest returned. She just has. Do you want to come round and see her?
Very much.
Right, come along.
Please sit down, Inspector. Yeah. Will you smoke?
No, thank you.
And your friend?
My colleague, Mr. Templeton.
Oh. Please smoke if you wish, Mr. Templeton. There's an ashtray in front of you.
Oh, thank you.
Now, Inspector.
We're engaged, madam, on an inquiry relative to certain events connected with the 27th of last month. I think you were in town at that time.
Yes, I think I was. Yes, certainly. How can I help you?
Oh, it's a question of a certain banknote which has been traced to your possession. £5 note numbered X/Y58929 was issued to you by Lloyd's Bank in payment of a cheque on the 19th. It'd help us very much if you could recollect to whom you paid it.
Well, that's rather difficult, Inspector. I really couldn't say. Oh, no, of course. How stupid of me. I remember. Yeah? I put it on a horse at Newmarket.
A horse?
Yes.
Oh, look, you're not getting anywhere with all this. Now, I don't care a continental cuss about the beastly note, and I'm sure that Sylvia doesn't.
Sylvia?
You may not know it, Mrs. Forrest, but Sylvia Lyndhurst is my cousin. And what she wants to know...
Templeton,
don't interrupt me, Inspector. All this shilly-shallying doesn't get us anywhere. What we all want to know is, who was it dining here with you on the night of the 27th? Now, who was it?
On the 27th? There was no one. Oh,
come, Mrs. Forrest, think again. You aren't going to tell us that you accounted by yourself for 3 bottles of Veuve Clicquot and 2 people's dinners.
Not forgetting the Wadenham ham, specially sent up by Portman and Mason's. Now, Mrs. Forrest...
Oh, wait a moment. Just a moment. I'll tell you everything. Would you mind getting me another brandy and soda? In the dining room through there. Oh, use this glass. Thank you.
It won't be a moment.
If you could... Simply tell me, Mrs. Forrest...
Could I have a drink first, Inspector?
Well...
Please?
Very well. Yeah. Templeton? Templeton!
Just coming. Oh, damn. Oh, well, here we are. Oh, excuse my taking such a time. Couldn't find the barely sight.
Always was a bit wool-gathering, don't you know? Staring me in the face all the time, what? Then I sloshed a lot of soda all over the sideboard, handshaking, nerves all to pieces and so on, upsetting, delicate business and all that. Sorry.
Thank you.
And now, Mrs. Forrest, do you think you could answer our question?
May I know, first of all, Inspector, what right you have to ask it?
Right. The police have a right to ask questions when anything's the matter. Here, murder is the matter. Right, indeed.
Murder? In that case, I can't help you. I did have a friend dining with me on the 27th, but as far as I know, he hasn't been murdered, nor has he murdered anybody.
It was a man, then?
I live apart from my husband, and I am trying to divorce him.
Sorry, madam, but I still press you for this gentleman's name.
Isn't that asking rather much?
Mrs. Forrest, if we could just know for certain it wasn't Lyndhurst, that's all. He was actually traced to this block of flats, you see, and Sylvia, my cousin, was frightfully upset and made a savage attack on poor old Lyndhurst with a revolver. Only fortunately, she's a shocking bad shot. But we thought that if you could just give us definite proof it wasn't him, it might calm her down and prevent murder being done.
I think I understand the position, Mr. Templeton, and I can give you my solemn assurance that I know nothing about your friend, Mr. Lyndhurst.
Major Lyndhurst.
And if Mrs. Lyndhurst is not satisfied and likes to come round and see me, I will do my best to satisfy her of the fact. Will that do?
Oh, thank you very much. I'm sure it's as much as anyone could expect. You will forgive my abruptness, won't you? I'm rather nervously constituted, don't you know? The whole business is exceedingly upsetting. Yeah, good afternoon. Come along, Inspector. It's quite all right. Come along. You see, it's quite all right. I'm really much obliged to you. Uncommonly so. Goodbye, Mrs. Forrest. Come along, Inspector. Goodbye.
And what was all that about?
I thought we should never get away. Now, quick, into the lift. Do you know how we get round to the back of these flats?
What do you want with the back? I wish you wouldn't stampede me like this, Peter. I've no business to let you come with me on a job at all. If I do, you might have the decency to keep quiet.
Shh! I am Hawkshaw, the detective, gathering fingerprints. I hung that glass out of Mrs. Forrest's window with some cotton. Now, let's go and collect it.
What the devil do you want her fingerprints for?
Well, you're a grateful sort of person. You could compare them with those on the beer bottle, if any. Besides, you never know when fingerprints may come in handy. They're excellent things we have about the house. Now, come along, Charles. Come along. Charles!
Oh, there you are. A new car.
The new Daimler Twin Six. Hop in.
Wow. Gadgets.
Certainly. I had a specially built. Well, what luck since last week?
Well, an analysis of Bertha Gotobed's body has been made, and there's not the slightest sign of foul play. There's no trace of violence or of poisoning. There was a heart weakness of fairly long standing. The verdict is syncope after a heavy meal.
Shock, I suppose. Amiable gentleman met a flat of friendly lady, suddenly turns funny after dinner and makes undesirable overtures. Virtuous young woman is horribly shocked. Weak heart gives way, collapse, exit. Agitation of amiable gentleman and friendly lady left with corpse on their hands. Ha ha, happy thought, motor car. If in forest, accent, omnes, singing and washing their hands. Where's the difficulty?
Proving it's the difficulty, that's all. And by the way, there were no finger marks on the bottle, only smears.
Gloves, I suppose. Which looks astonishingly like camouflage. An ordinary picnicking couple wouldn't put on gloves to handle a beer bottle.
I know, but we can't arrest all the people who wear gloves.
I weep for you, the walrus said. I deeply sympathize. Never mind, Charles, it's early days yet, and I've hardly made much progress myself in the Dawson case.
You still think that's a case, do you?
I certainly do. Agatha Dawson was murdered by Mary Whittaker, all right. The only thing I don't know is how and why.
Well, just so.
But that's what makes it so interesting, don't you see? I believe this is the case I've always been looking for, Charles. The case of cases. The murder without discernible means or motive or clue. The whole thing fascinates me. Miss Dawson is such a beautiful subject, so old and ill, so likely to die soon, bound to die before long. And so rich, Charles, so very rich.
Yes, rich certainly, but she refused to make a will. Where's Mary Whittaker's motive for killing her? Mary was bound to inherit the lot anyway.
Well, perhaps she was impatient.
Surely not.
Yes, and here is another thought. Suppose Mary really was impatient with the old girl for being such an unconscionable time of dying. If Miss Dawson had become aware of that, she would certainly have resented it and may very well have expressed an intention of making a will after all, but in somebody else's favour. A kind of insurance against premature disease.
Well, then why didn't she send for a solicitor?
She may have tried to, but after all, she was bedridden and helpless. Mary may have prevented the message being sent.
That sounds plausible.
Yes, doesn't it? And the person who will be able to confirm or deny it is Nurse Forbes. So I shall go to see her tomorrow morning. But I say, look, if she did change her mind about will-making, what was the document Mary Whittaker was trying to get her to sign that morning she had her hysterical attack?
When Bertha and Evelyn go to bed, were on the landing outside her room?
Exactly. I wonder what was going on then.
Yeah.
By George, it would almost be worth going to Canada to ask Evelyn that.
There's no need to do that, Peter. Evelyn Cropper's coming over, didn't I tell you?
What?
Yes, arriving at Liverpool on Friday morning on the Star of Quebec.
Good gracious, Charles, why didn't you say so? We must meet her. Hmm? The girl will be in horrible danger if we don't.
What do you mean?
Charles, I want that Dawson story. And this time I want to be quite sure the young woman doesn't have a heart attack before I interview her.
In that episode of Unnatural Death, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael. Miss Crimson, Ambrosine Philpotts. Inspector Parker, Gabriel Wolfe. Superintendent Walmsley, Godfrey Kenton. Mrs. Gulliver, Pauline Letts. Miss Murgatroyd, Maddie Head. Mrs. Peasgood, Betty Cardno. Mrs. Forrest, Bridget McConnell. Death in Epping Forest was adapted by Chris Miller from the book Unnatural Death by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.